John 20, verses 11 to 18. But Mary was standing outside the tomb weeping, and so as she wept, she stooped and looked into the tomb. And she saw two angels in white, sitting one at the head and one at the feet, where the body of Jesus had been lying. And they said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" She said to them, "Because they've taken away my Lord, and I don't know where they've laid him." When she had said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there. But she didn't know it was him. Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you seeking?" Supposing him to be the gardener, she said to him, "Sir, if you've carried him away, tell me where you've laid him, and I will take him away." And Jesus said to her, "Mary." And she turned to him and said to him in Hebrew, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said to her, "Stop clinging to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father. But go to my brethren and say to them, I ascend to my Father and your Father, my God and your God." Mary Magdalene came, announcing to the disciples, "I've seen the Lord," and that he had just said all these things to her.
Perhaps you're familiar with the name Rick Warren. Rick is a pastor and author of the best-selling book, The Purpose-Driven Life. Rick, along with his wife, Kay, they lost their son, Matthew, to a severe mental illness. And in the wake of their tragedy, Rick has been asked over and over again, "How have you made it through? How have you had the strength to move forward in the face of your pain?" And Rick, he describes that as he's asked this question, his response typically is, "The answer is Easter." This is how he describes it. He says, "The death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus happened over 3 days. Friday was the day of suffering and pain and agony. Saturday was the day of doubt and confusion and misery. But Easter, that Sunday, was a day of hope and joy and victory." He goes on to say, "Here's the fact of life. You will face these 3 days over and over and over in your lifetime. And when you do, you'll find yourself asking, as I did, three fundamental questions. First, what do I do in my days of pain? Second, how do I get through my days of doubt and confusion? And third, how do I get to the days of joy and victory? The answer is Easter." The answer is Easter. I'm grateful that you have chosen to be with us here on this Easter Sunday. And I presume that everyone in this room is living somewhere within one of these three questions. Some of you are here this morning, and you're enjoying a season of joy and hope. And that's just awesome. That's where I find myself this morning. But others of you are in a season of doubt and confusion. Perhaps for you, you're really just trying to figure life out. And I get it. I've been there. Others still of you are here, and you're in a season of pain and struggle. And no matter which of the questions you find yourself in today, I want to point you to the answer we find in Easter and in the Jesus that stands at the center of it all. Specifically, I want to point you to a precise moment that took place in that first Easter Sunday outside the tomb in Jerusalem. I want to point you to that moment because I believe it helps us understand what can happen powerfully in this moment as we encounter the risen Jesus through his Holy Spirit. So let me right now invite you to find your place on that first Easter morning when the risen Jesus met with a woman named Mary Magdalene as she stood outside the tomb weeping. Now, we don't know much about this Mary Magdalene from the scriptures, but what we do know is that when she met Jesus, her life completely changed. Mary was part of a small group of grateful women who, contrary to the culture of their day, followed Jesus around in his ministry. She learned from Jesus in his ministry. And in fact, the scriptures tell us that she supported Jesus' ministry from her own pocket. Some traditions link this Mary Magdalene to the unnamed woman in Luke chapter 7. In the story, we read about this woman, and the only description we have of this woman is that she lived a life of sin. How about that? Your legacy being written down in the scriptures forever, and that's what they say about you. This term likely refers to the broken situation that she found herself in, living as a prostitute. And what we know of this woman is she was so taken with the love of Jesus. She was so taken with his embrace and his message of forgiveness that she broke into the middle of a dinner party at the house of a prominent religious leader. In the middle of the dinner party, rushed through the doors and went to the guest of honor who was Jesus and fell at his feet and began washing his dirty feet with her tears and her hair. See, that kind of thing happens when broken people encounter the love of God in Jesus. In Luke chapter 8, a chapter later, Mary Magdalene is specifically named. And we learn there that she lived her life, it says, in bondage to evil. That is, she lived under this dark cloud of darkness in her life. And typically in the first century context, when people are described this way, they were turned out of their families and onto the streets. And so what we do know about Mary Magdalene is that before she met Jesus, she was an outcast. That she was a woman who was down on her luck, so to speak. But then she met the risen Jesus. Or she met Jesus. And he released her from this darkness. He released her from her despair. And it turned her life around. And then we find the same Mary Magdalene outside the tomb on that first Easter morning. And she's weeping. And her tears are understandable, aren't they? The Jesus she had put her faith in a few days previously had been crucified on the cross. And so she rose early that Easter morning in her grief in order to go early and pay her respects. But when she arrived where they had laid his body, she found that this great big stone in front of the tomb had been rolled away and the tomb was empty. And in that moment, Mary thought what any of us would have thought. They've taken my Lord away. I don't know where they've put his body. But then, through the blur of her tear-filled eyes, she looks up and sees a man who she thinks to be the gardener. And he asks her, with great tenderness in his voice, "Why are you crying?" She responds through her tears. She says, "If you have taken his body away, tell me where it is so that I can go and get it." And then with a single word, with a single powerful word, Jesus, the risen Jesus, puts an end to her tears. One word, he calls her name, Mary. And her tears stop. I heard a well-respected theologian and pastor named John Stott once say, "Nothing dries our human tears quicker than an assurance of the resurrection of Jesus." And that is what was happening for Mary in that moment. And it's been happening in moments ever since by people who have encountered the risen Jesus through his Spirit. Nothing dries our tears quicker than an encounter with the risen Jesus. And it is that moment that I want to press into this morning together so that we might experience what Easter is all about. Easter begins with a question. Jesus, the Son of God, comes to each one of us and he asks, "Why are you crying?" And now I know not all of us enter into this morning in a place of mourning, right? Like Rick Warren says, some of us are living in days of Easter Sunday joy. Not all of us are in Good Friday mourning. But like Rick tells us, in the span of our lifetime, we will all face all 3 days of Easter. There will be days of great joy, yes, but there will be days of confusion and there will be days of pain. And so allow the question of Jesus to penetrate the whole scope of your life. The Son of God comes to you and asks, "Why are you crying?" Now, we need to understand at the outset that Jesus, with this question, he isn't condemning our tears. He doesn't go to Mary and say, "Stop your crying. There's nothing to cry about." Maybe you've had someone do that to you. Jesus isn't condemning our tears. No, we see that Jesus himself, he wept at the funeral of his friend Lazarus. There is a time for tears. I watched the movie trailer for the movie Wonder. Are you familiar with this movie? It's a story about a young boy who is living with a severe facial deformity, some genetic disease. And it's his story of his journey of courage and triumph in a world that puts so much emphasis that your value comes in how you look. And I'm watching this trailer, and I am virtually bawling. Like, I could never go see this movie in public because I would be the man sitting there trying to be really stoic and pretending I'm not crying, but there's like all this liquid coming down from my eyes. No, I'm okay. It's really hot in here, isn't it? Sweating. And the tears that I shed, that lump in my throat when I saw this trailer was good. They were tears of redemption, tears of goodness. Jesus isn't condemning tears with this question. We need to understand that. But Jesus also, he isn't condescending toward our tears. He doesn't go to Mary and say, "Now there, there, dear, stop your crying." He doesn't condemn our tears. He's not condescending towards our tears. He asks, "Why are you crying?" Because God cares deeply to know the sorrows that you face in your soul. Jesus' question is an invitation to share the burdens you carry with a God who has the power to walk you through to life. Easter begins with a question. The Son of God comes to us and he asks, "Why are you crying?" I can think of three reasons, at least three reasons. First, we weep, whether outwardly or inwardly, because sometimes these aren't tears that come out. We weep like Mary did, because of sin. Now, stick with me for a minute, because I know the moment I say that word, people check out. We have an aversion to the word sin. But let's think of this from Mary's perspective for just a moment. 2 days previous, Mary had experienced something horrific, something tragic, the crucifixion of Jesus. 2 days earlier, she had seen this one whom she had put her faith in come to be nailed to a Roman cross. And Jesus did nothing to deserve this death sentence. He was an innocent man. But some political and religious leaders thought they could benefit from his execution. So they ordered that he be impaled to a Roman cross and tortured until he died. And now, in our day and age, we would call this all kinds of things. A grave injustice. We'd call it police brutality. We would call it out for a gross abuse of power. But the Bible simply calls it sin. We're told that Jesus died at the hands of sinful men. And now, this is how I've come to understand and explain sin, because it's been helpful for me. Sin is whenever we say no to God's goodness and his leadership. Because when we say no to God's goodness and his leadership, everything around us begins to fracture and break. Take greed, for example. When we say no to God's way of generosity, it leads us in a direction of justifying the exploitation of people and the exploitation of the world, the earth. When we say no to God's way of generosity, we tend to justify the fact that we can exploit people and the world in order to save a buck or to make a buck. And it leads to a world of fracture. Saying no to God's way of generosity leads to a fracture between us and other people and us and our world. It leads to brokenness. This is what sin does. And so, as Mary experienced and saw what happened to Jesus on the cross, who died at the hands of sinful men, when Jesus asked her, "Why are you crying?" she very well could have said, "I'm crying because of the sins of the world." And I wonder, have you experienced sorrow because of someone else's sin against you? Whether it be a hate-filled word or a betrayal, an unfaithful spouse, an absent parent, an abuse. See, sins, they cause weeping in us, outwardly or inwardly, especially if they have been committed against us. They cause our tears. Now, let me take this a little step further. What about the times when we personally say no to God's goodness and his leadership? Might those be moments that cause us to weep outwardly or inwardly? I know as a parent, there have been times when, as a dad, I have acted with a misplaced anger. I have lashed out at my children because of my own frustrations. And it would be easy for me to stand up here and sugarcoat things and brush it under the rug and say, this is no big deal because, you know what, every parent does it. And the truth is, every parent does it. But the truth of the matter is, in those moments, I have sinned against my children. And I've sinned against a God who is calling me into his way of love and service toward my family. And it causes fracture. It causes brokenness. And in those moments of my misplaced anger, I feel a grieving inside my soul. I know something needs to be made right. I know I need forgiveness. And so I wonder about you. Does your own sin ever cause a grieving in your own soul? Maybe you've been living with a mistake you've done in your past, and you've been living with it for years, and it's like a burden to your soul. You know that something needs to be made right, that there needs to be forgiveness. Well, here's the good news. Nothing dries the tears we cry over sin quicker than an encounter with the risen Jesus. And he dries our tears because the risen Jesus makes certain that we are forgiven of our sins, and he makes certain that God's justice will be brought to the sins of the world. And we can be certain that we're forgiven and that God brings his justice to the earth because Jesus rose from the dead. The resurrection of Jesus is the proof that we need to know that Jesus can do what he came to say he would do. You see, Jesus, when he went around first century Palestine, he went around proclaiming that he was bringing God's forgiveness to the earth and that he was going to bring God's justice to the sins of the world. And the religious leaders of his day knew something was amiss in what he was saying because they believed, rightly, that only God could forgive sins and only God could set the world right again. So they asked him, they said, "Jesus, by what authority can you make the claim that you have come to forgive the world of sin and set the world right? Whose authority do you speak in?" And you know what Jesus said in John's gospel? He responded to their question by, in effect, pointing to himself and said, "Destroy this temple, and I will raise it in 3 days." See, they didn't know what he was talking about in that moment, but he was referring to Easter. Destroy this temple, this body, and I will raise it in 3 days, and that will be the proof that you need to see the authority in which I come to forgive the sins of the world and bring God's justice to it. Nothing dries the tears we cry over sin quicker than an encounter with the risen Jesus. We cry over sin, but we also cry over our troubles, the problems that we face in life. Think about this from Mary's perspective, how she wept over the troubles she was facing. She had put all her faith in this Jesus who said he was going to set the world right again under God's order. And he had done that in her own life, right? He had released her from a great darkness, a great despair, as she had received a measure of God's kingdom healing in her life. But now, outside the tomb, she weeps because Jesus is dead, or so she thinks. He's dead, along with her dreams of the future. And I can only imagine that somewhere under the tears that she sheds is this echo in her soul that is crying out, now what do I do? You see, we mourn, whether outwardly or inwardly, over the troubles we face in life. Whether that's the death of a dream or the troubled relationships that we live within, the trouble within our families, maybe it's a financial trouble. Have you ever wept over the loss of a job or the loneliness that you're experiencing? Maybe for you, life just sometimes feels like it's way too much to handle. See, we weep over the troubles that we face. But here's the good news. Nothing dries the tears we shed over our troubles quicker than an encounter with the risen Jesus. And he dries our tears because we can be certain that Jesus, by his Spirit, meets us in our very place of need. He meets us in our troubles and fills us with his empowering presence that leads us into the joy and the life of God. Romans chapter 8. It says that the same Spirit that rose Jesus from the dead is alive in those who turn to him. Said another way, because Jesus has forgiven us through his sacrifice on the cross, we have been made clean in God's sight. And so now God's Holy Spirit can come and live within us. His presence comes to live within us. And all of this means that God never leaves us alone outside the tomb of our tears of trouble. But he comes through his Spirit, right into that place of our deepest need, and he fills us with his very presence. You are not alone in your troubles. And through his Spirit, he leads us to the joy and the peace of God. In John's gospel, Jesus says, in this life, you will have troubles. You will have them. But take heart, for I have overcome the world. You see, the promise of God is not that we will face no more troubles. The promise of God is that he will fill us with the Spirit of Jesus who has overcome the troubles of the world. And it means he knows the way forward. Nothing dries our tears of troubles quicker than an encounter with the risen Jesus, because he meets us in our place of trouble and he knows the way to joy, to peace in God. And you know what? This isn't wishful thinking. This is not wishful thinking. In fact, we've all seen it on display this morning. We saw it the moment that people walked out on stage and showed you how the resurrected Jesus meets a person in the face of their troubles. And somehow, by his resurrection power and Spirit, he raises us from a place of despair and leads us. He leads us even into places of joy and peace in the face of our troubles. Nothing dries our tears quicker, the tears we shed over our troubles, than an encounter with the risen Jesus. We cry over sin, we cry over our troubles, and we cry over death. These are Mary's most obvious tears. And in fact, they are the tears that we are most fearful of as people. And maybe you've faced death yourself, a diagnosis in you or the family. And maybe you've recently lost a loved one. We weep over death. But even in death, Jesus heralds the good news. The resurrection of Jesus is the proof that he has overcome the grave. Not even death can stop Jesus. And we can think of it this way, that on Good Friday, well, actually, back up. We'll get to Good Friday. Death, it causes great pain in us because death was never part of God's plan. It was never part of his intent for human beings. Rather, death is a byproduct of sin. And it makes sense. Just think of this. It makes sense that if sin is saying no to the giver of life, if it's saying no and turning our back on the giver of life, then sin inevitably leads us to the antithesis of life. It leads us to death. And so on Good Friday, what happens is Jesus takes the curse of sin upon himself on the cross, the sin that we have caused. He takes the curse of sin upon himself, and he enters into the death that we deserve. And there on the cross, he undoes the curse. And then when we come to Easter Sunday, we see what inevitably happens when the curse of sin has been unraveled. The death, the grave, no longer has victory over Jesus. The curse of sin has been broken. And what inevitably happens is life. Life through Jesus. You could say that on Good Friday, sin's curse is dismantled. And on Easter Sunday, the grave is overcome. Nothing dries our tears over death quicker than an assurance of the hope we have of life after death. Jesus dries our tears even over death. And for those who attach their life to Jesus, death no longer needs to be a cold, hard end stop, but rather the entryway through which we pass to receive a resurrection of our own. The story of Easter, it begins with a question. It comes to each one of us and asks, why are you crying? Is it because of sin? Allow Jesus to dry your tears with the assurance that you have been forgiven of all your wrongs. Let him dry your tears with the assurance that he is bringing God's justice to the earth for the sins of the world. Are you weeping over your troubles? Let Jesus, the risen Jesus, dry your tears with the assurance that he meets you in that very place of your troubles and he knows the way toward joy and peace. Are your tears because of death? Let the risen Jesus meet you in your fear and your grief and dry your tears with the assurance that he has made way for life beyond the grave. See, Jesus, he put an end to Mary's tears with one simple word. One simple and powerful word brought an end to the tears that Mary was crying. He simply called her name, Mary. And this morning, the risen Jesus is calling your name. And he's inviting you to experience all that Easter means. Yes, the answer is Easter. Let's pray. Jesus. Oh, Jesus, we enter into your good news story this morning. You have risen from the grave, Not even death can hold you. As you bore the weight of our sin and death on the cross, you have dismantled its power in our lives and in our world. And so this morning, God, we run to you, the one who calls our name, and we ask, bring us to life. Bring us to life, Jesus. We thank you. We thank you for Easter.